I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Maybe she hit your butter. You can't shank that one.
Look, if you're the Mexican Mac O'Grady, you got to figure out why I'm still shanking the ball.
You know.
And what's the problem? I'm catching on the hosel, right?
Yeah, right.
Moving my head.
Yeah.
I'm laying it off.
Well, that too.
I'm pronating.
When you're not supinating.
I'm clearing too early. I'm clearing too late. My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Greetings, sports fans. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, here with Kevin, here with Darren. Today's Wednesday, June 11th. This is episode 175. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. Send us a comment. We'll get back to you. Darren likes responding to everybody. Give him a comment. Tonight we go around the world of sports. Seems like we got a lot going on, but not a lot going on. But we're going to go around the world of sports. We'll start it off with the results from Belmont in Saratoga. The 157th Belmont Stakes went off this past Saturday. Sovereignty takes the crown, beats Journalism. Baeza comes in third. The win ticket paid $7, Kev. The $2 exacta paid $13. The $1 trifecta, Kevin, paid $13.80.
I cashed both of those. $26.
And the $1 super, if you had Rodriguez fourth, paid $40.50. Darren, let's talk about the Belmont. You know
the funniest thing was it rained all day, but I don't think that the track was bad. I thought it ran really well. If you want to put it in perspective, this was the fourth fastest time ever run, 10 furlongs at Saratoga. And it was arrogant, obviously, the only one to break 2 minutes. I know me and Kev will talk about this old course shit. Sorry, G. 159 and 6 back in 91. But this was the fourth fastest time ever. That's how well Sovereignty ran. So, and to be honest, watching these races and Sovereignty, you know, the best horse in the race, there was no doubt about it. Journalism ran a good race. But I think, Alvarado is a little bit better than Rispoli. It just seems like he follows. When Rispoli makes the move, Alvarado makes the move. And then he knows he has more kick. And that's what happened. And it was a great race. And now we look forward to the Travers. And I'm curious to see if they make a jockey change on Journalism. Because he's been outridden twice now. And unless they just don't think that he's as good a horse. And by the timing, by the two minutes and 6.69, fourth fastest ever at Saratoga for a mile and a quarter, he may not just be a good enough horse to beat Sovereignty, because Sovereignty seems to only be getting better. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it played out just like you called it last week, Darren. There's absolutely no surprises. Rodriguez and Crudo went out. Sovereignty and Journalism were stalking pretty well. Baeza sat in sixth. They got to the stretch. You had Journalism get to the lead. Sovereignty got second. Like you said, Alvarado did a good job of following Journalism to make sure he didn't let him pull away, let him make the move alone. Rodriguez fell back to third, Baeza to fourth. And as the stretch came down, Baeza, you know, tried. He just didn't have enough kick to pass the other two. The other two were just far superior to Baeza, as it turned out. Sovereignty pulled away, won by three. The other four horses, you know, once Crudo dropped out, the other three horses or four horses, you know, just never had any sort of interest in hitting the board at all. And it was very much the form. So when you saw those payouts, you know, Gino, you mentioned the dollar amount, but, you know, it's the three favorites in some order.
Yeah. exactly what it is. I mean, you can't do anything about the payout.
You're
a little low, G.
Can't do anything about the payout when you have that. So
a little higher.
Gino has a new microphone, everybody.
Yeah.
And because of this new microphone, Gino's having a hard time being heard.
But as you were saying, Darren, I'm really hoping these two horses have a chance to now go back, take a little time off, and prepare to meet up in the Traverse. I'd love to see these two hook up again in the Traverse, where they're both going to be in, hopefully, on the same rest, where there's not going to be excuses for that, where you've got a 10-horse field, not a 20-horse field, the Derby, so trips shouldn't be a factor either. I want to see these two. And for the better of horse racing, I would love to see Sovereignty win and really set up just what could be a really, really great Breeders' Cup Classic.
If you I agree with you. Yeah, the one thing that I was going to say, same thing as you, is that, you know, you can come up with a reason for journalism missing on the Derby, and you come up for a reason for missing here because he ran three races in 5 weeks while Sovereignty took the delay off. At the same time, it's very hard to argue with how great Sovereignty is. Oh, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And again, when you come out with fourth fastest time at Saratoga ever in a mile and a quarter, you know, that's the Travers Stakes distance. I mean, so you're talking about great horses.
Yeah.
I mean, every single time. And the second fastest since 91 when Arrogate did it. I mean, you know, so the other two times were, you know, Secretariat and I forget who the other horse was. Might have been War Admiral. I'm not 100% sure.
Only those two?
Yeah, just a couple of
terrible horses.
I think they were the two. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they were. And, you know, you want to see them on equal rest. I do think that they might have to change jockeys on journalism just because I think Alvarado's got Rispoli figured out, and you might want to mix it up and mix up the way the move is made. But that's it. I mean, right now, listen, they made it as good as you can have the Belmont where there was no chance of the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
That was as good as you could get. Two best horses. They ran the same exact order as they ran in the Derby, first, second, and third. You know, a lot of symmetry. You know, we'll see what happens, and hopefully we get a good Travers, and really hope we get a good Classic.
Yep.
Okay.
G, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, but I couldn't. You weren't moving for a sec.
You were frozen for a second there.
All right, so on we go from the Belmont when we go over to the playoffs. So the NBA is playing Game 3 as we speak. Series is tied 1-1. OKC at this moment is up 34-30 in the second. Kev?
These schedules are just brutal.
They're brutal.
I mean, they played Game 1 last Thursday. They're in OKC. You need 2 days of rest to play Sunday? And then 2 days of travel all the way from OKC to Indiana, which is a grueling, grueling trip. I know that. You got to go all the way north a couple of hours and 2 more days of rest. They've got, only 1 day of rest between games 3 and 4. And then 2 days off in between the rest of the series. I mean, it's just so stretched out. It's just impossible to get into this NBA Finals. And I think it also leads into the NHL Finals. I think the NBA, because of the TV rights and because of the TV money, the NBA dictates the schedule they want. And the NHL has to follow suit because the NHL does not want to put a Stanley Cup final up against the NBA final game. So the
NHL playoffs
drag out too.
Yeah. I mean, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday for 3 games is just crazy stuff. I mean, come on.
Most of us don't have much of an interest in any of the teams. When you give us this kind of separation, it just makes it 10 times worse. These are not – I mean, listen, OKC is the best team in the league. It's not like we're sitting there talking about a bad team. But, again, it's OKC, okay? So unless you follow them every day, you know, unless you're 12 years old and you've decided that you're an SGA junkie, you don't really care about OKC.
Yeah.
And Indiana, you know, I don't know if there's a superstar. I mean, do you think there's a bunch of kids who are going to walk around with Halliburton jerseys next year? Maybe. I can't imagine it, though. So, I mean, this is not an exciting enough series for this kind of crap to happen.
No, Indiana with Siakam and Halliburton and a few others are real good, solid players, but there's no superstar. You know, they're much more of a team. OKC's got, like you said, the superstar potential with SGA, who's, you know, one of the young real stars. You know, he's always in contention the last couple of years for the scoring title. And, you know, if we want to get into the games themselves, you know, game one, OKC led by 12 at the half, led by 9 after 3, actually extending out to 15 with 9:42 left. And then Indiana did what they've done a few times this playoffs. They made the comeback. And much like game one against the Knicks, Halbert hit the game winner with 0.3 left, and they steal the 111-110 win in OKC in game one. The difference was game two, Sunday night. If you stayed up, if you could sit through this whole game, you're a better NBA fan, basketball fan than I am.
Kev, you're the biggest one of the three of us. So
OKC led by 6 after one. They used a 33-21 second quarter, go up 18, and never got close. I mean, it was just a blowout the whole way through. Never threatened. SGA had 34. And, you know, that was it. It was, you know, 1-1, and now they're back to Indiana for games 3 and 4. And, you know, like I said, if you could sit through this, all the more power to you.
Yeah, it's just not it's not riveting right now. And because there's no rhythm to the playoff, to the series at all, it makes it that much harder.
Yeah.
You just don't feel like there's any kind of rhythm right now to watch these games. They're not household teams. They're not teams that you can't wait to watch. And you don't see that. I mean, OKC plays defense, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like the series lacks intensity. Listen, if it goes to a game 7, maybe there's something exciting that happens here. We all picked it to be a really quick series. Me and Gino both predicted 4. I think you had 5, Kevin.
I said
the only one that they might lose is game 1. They lost game 1. Let's see if I'm right. I don't think so, because I'm usually not, but let's see what happens.
You know, it's funny. You know, we're not huge NBA fans, but even if you are a huge NBA fan, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday is not a way to get into the series, even if you're a big fan. I mean, it's just not. There's no rhythm to try to get into this.
Yeah. I mean, we think back, you know, and we're old fans of the 90s NBA.
Yep.
We had the Knicks and, you know, the Ewing and Starks and Pat Riley Knicks and Jeff Van Gundy and, you know, the Jordan Bulls and all. Jordan didn't need 3 days between finals games.
And they played 82 games then. All the players played the whole season.
Yeah.
Ewing didn't take days off.
No. I mean, with all the rest they get during the regular season, when 72 games is you played 72 games this year. Oh, wow. Wonderful. Congratulations. And then you got to take all this rest in the playoffs. Just so tough to watch.
And then even you go back to the 80s, guys, where we all started really watching it, you know, and listen, I love Bernard and all that stuff, but the Lakers and the Celtics, these were not two teams that played slow. They played every other day or every, you know, and they all played 82 games and they ran. They pushed. The Lakers just pushed. And the Celtics, who didn't look like they were a team that was going to push, they just pushed too. And the series would just be, it'd be grueling when you watch those two teams play.
And you know what? Even if there was a day off in between every game, at least then there would be a little momentum building.
Yep.
You know,
it would be game 4 tonight. It would literally be game 4 tonight.
Right, but
Thursday,
you started,
Saturday, Monday, Wednesday.
You know, you started last Thursday. You'd have Thursday. Off day Friday, you play Saturday. Off day Sunday, you play Monday. And all of a sudden, you're building a little bit. But, you know, you've basically gone 6 days, and they're finally getting to the third game. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible to watch, too.
I got home last night saying, okay, I'm going to put on whatever the final game is for a little bit. There was none.
Yeah.
I just did not remember. Yeah. They had nothing on Tuesday. Nothing.
Yeah.
But watch, the college baseball stuff was over, which I was kind of occupying a little bit of time with. You know, golf isn't started yet. You know, baseball, listen, we're going to get into that. Fine, great. But there was nothing else to, like, just see what was going on. It wasn't like I was going to watch it as the primary. I was going to have the Yankees and the Mets up, but it was more of the what the hell are we doing here type of thing.
And Darren, not only that, but neither NBA nor NHL was on last night.
That's what I mean. Neither one. I was going to try to watch either final. I couldn't. That was what frustrated me. I got back. I drove back from AC, dropped my father off. I was a little tired. I was like, I'm just going to sit in front of the TV for a little bit. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
All right. Well, right now it's 36-36 with about 8.5 minutes left in the second. let's move over to the NHL.
One second.
Okay.
What are the Knicks doing?
They're asking every coach.
They've been rejected by Donovan and the Bulls. They've been rejected by Kidd and the Mavs, even though there's some rumors that might just be negotiating for a first rounder. They didn't get permission to speak to Udoka. Well, I mean, listen, you know, Kev, you and I were both pretty vehement about thinking that we had to make a move. I don't know what they're doing right now.
No.
There should have been a plan in place. If you were going to make a move, you should have known what you were going after. I mean, unless they love Budenholzer or they love, Malone, I don't know what the hell this team is doing right now. Or Mike Brown. I mean, one of those three. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, thoughts?
Why are we going after coaches who are already in place? You know, I mean, especially teams that have been successful.
You wouldn't.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Do you think they just jumped too fast?
Right now, without a plan.
They didn't have a plan.
That's the thing. I didn't mind the move, but you thought they had somebody in line that they were going to put into the spot, and right now it doesn't look like they're going to. Another guy you hear about expulsion? They're not. Miami's not going to let him talk to the Knicks. You think Riley's going to let him come up here? Get out of here.
Absolutely not.
They get rejected all over the place, and they're going to have to take. You know, listen, I don't consider Michael Malone a real retread coach. I mean, I think he had a really good career and he's done good work. I don't. Budenholzer not necessarily as successful. He had a couple of good years early on, but didn't do much with that Phoenix team. And by the way, I love seeing trade packages for Kevin Durant. Who the hell wants Kevin Durant? I don't even understand
this. Not at this point.
Nobody has a name. They're in a trade package. It's like, what are we doing in this sport? But I just think that the Knicks right now look foolish. They don't have a plan, like you said, Kevin. They don't have a plan.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it right now.
I mean, and the fact that this is coming out, that they're being rejected by these teams to even talk to their coaches, is just a bad look for them. I mean, it's an embarrassing look. And like you said, for the trade proposals, if Giannis winds up asking for a trade, he's the guy you go after, not Durant. Durant's 37 years old.
And no, he's not going to do anything for you at this stage of his career, in my opinion.
No.
But yeah, so I mean, I just wanted to ask you guys about that because I think it's right now the Knicks look a little foolish. Sorry, G.
No, it's good. It's a good point. We'll move over to the NHL. So Florida has a 2-1 lead over Edmonton. Game one, Edmonton won in overtime. Game two, Florida won in double overtime. And game three, which was Monday night, got to be a little bit of a blowout. Darren, you want to talk to me about some of this?
The one thing about the NHL that does a little bit better than the NBA is the chippiness. So they start hating each other. They start fighting. 10-minute misconducts toward the end of that game. There was a lot of bad blood late in the second period, I'd say.
140 penalty minutes in game three.
It was crazy.
And you bring up the chippiness. I mean, especially from Florida's perspective, when you've got Marchand, who's just, I don't think
and Bennett. These are three of the chippiest guys in the league. It's not like Edmonton say, the quiet boys either, by the way.
Bennett was the second one on my list. Kachuk, you know, we like Kachuk for the American.
But he's still a different team chippy USA as now. Hell, though.
But, you know, you've got three very chippy players who excel. I mean, Bennett and Marchand have 4 goals each in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I think they've gotten under the – by game three, especially late second period, they've gotten under Edmonton's skin.
And they're living rent free in their minds right now. Living rent free up there.
Yep.
But at least it keeps even though the game was a blowout, because there was a chance of an explosion like there was, you stick around a little bit. You want to see if there's a fight. It's one of those things about hockey that makes it a little bit intriguing. Listen, Skinner got pulled. Do I think all the goals were Skinner's fault? No, there were a lot of really good goals on him. We're gonna see. I mean, Edmonton has to bounce back in game four. I don't think that they – I mean, listen, they fell behind 3-0 last year, brought it back to 7. So you can't put anything by them. But McDavid got knocked out for a little while in game.
Yeah.
Also, he got hurt. Yeah. He came back. Draisaitl, you know, hasn't been as big a factor as you expect in the series so far. And the loss of Hyman seems to be a real issue because he's just another forward that could put the puck in the net. But this is these are two evenly matched teams. It's kind of a fun series to watch. Even though I don't care about it either, I actually hate one and I dislike the other. There's no hatred toward Florida. I just don't like them. And listen, you know, it's a stupid thing I'm going to say, but Tkachuk and Bennett both started with the Flames, so I've been rooting for these guys for years. I mean, those are my guys. Bennett was a first-round pick for us. Tkachuk was a first-round pick for us. We decided that they weren't good enough. Well, Tkachuk decided to leave. We traded Bennett. But it's just one of those type of things that drives you nuts that you have to watch them on another team. But, you know, even though I don't enjoy it, unlike the NBA, I can sit there and watch it because there is a certain level of excitement to the sport still, even though it's still way too drawn out as well, Kevin.
I want to just back up one thing. Game two, I was watching a lot of the third period, and when Edmonton came back and scored with 17 seconds left, Corey Perry.
That was great.
It was like, and this is where the NHL excels on television, because the last 2 minutes of that third period were just some great hockey to watch. Let me tell you. They score with 17 seconds. They go to overtime. They go through a whole overtime. Nobody scores. And it takes into the second overtime before Florida gets the game winner. But, I mean, it was just it's a great game.
Hockey is the purest sport as for the time games, as far as you've got 2 minutes left in the game. It's going to take you 2.5 minutes to play. You're not calling timeout every freaking five seconds.
You get one
for the entire game. And, you know, it's a 30-second timeout. You know, it's not like it's, you know, you got to sit there for 5 minutes and talk about a play, and then, you know, they said see what the defense says up and call another time. No, hockey, 2.5 minutes to play 2 minutes. I mean, it's just nonstop. It's just, you know, if you don't get excited watching – the last couple of minutes of a tight one goal or tie game in the playoffs, especially, you're not a sports fan. I'm sorry.
And the one thing I'll add is that, Gino, you said it, like NHL has it on everybody watching that game. It's still the best sport live out of all of them. It's not even really close. Yeah. Hockey has a superiority live to any other sport you watch. When you're in that building watching your team or any two teams play, it just has the emotion. The crowd is hanging on every single play because every single thing can mean something. And that's what makes it stand out. I know it doesn't have the popularity of the other three major sports, or maybe the other four if you're going to call soccer in there. But when you get into and you watch two teams with this kind of talent, listen, I like the fisticuffs. I know some people don't. I get that. But outside of that, there's the pure skill of the game and the emotion and the pulling of the goalie. And the only thing that's going to slow down at all is a couple of icings. And they're dropping the puck within 15 seconds of that icing. Everybody skates back. Everybody gets to their spot, and they're dropping the damn puck. It's not an 18-minute last 2 minutes of a game like the NFL or the NBA. And that's something – there's something cool about it. You're right, Kev.
Yep.
Two other quick points in hockey before we move on.
Okay.
I want to ask you guys, you happy about Wah staying on? Signing Palmieri, all that stuff? Did you feel like it was the right move for the Islanders?
Why, yes, Palmieri. Yeah. No, we never really talked about it, you know, the new GM.
Yep.
You know, the he was the assistant or VP of player development or whatever for Tampa Bay. So, you know, we know he comes from a good organization. If just let him have free reign here. He knows how to build a team if you learn anything from the Tampa Bay organization. And, you know, we had to get – I love Lou. Lou was great. You know, we mentioned that one. It was nasty. His contract was not being renewed. He did a great job of turning around the Islanders and making them relevant again. But it was time for new blood.
I agree with you.
But re-signing Palmieri,
they got him cheap, so it's not like they spent a lot of money on him. And
you know, it's gonna be interesting to see what they do with that number one pick.
No, absolutely. And then the Rangers in talks of trading Kreider to the Ducks. We'll see what happens there. He's a homegrown Ranger. I know that means nothing to you, Gino, but me and Kevin like the homegrown player. I'm never going to let you live it down, pal. Kreider's getting a little older, but he does give the Ducks maybe that one veteran that they need to get to the next level. Rangers were looking to move on, and this is what happens when you are the President's Cup champion 1 year, and the next year you don't even make the playoffs. Moves moves happen. Coaches get fired, and key players in the past are no longer there. But that's what I had for the NHL, boys.
All right. Kev, you want to tell me about the French Open?
Yeah, we actually had an American win on the women's side. Coco Gauff. Last week I mentioned that the qualifier, Boisson, Coco took care of her in the semifinals, and Sabalenka took care of Swiatek in the semis, sets up for the final. Gauff lost the first set in the tiebreak 6-7, but rallied to win 6-2, 6-4. First female American to win at Roland Garros since Serena in 2015. It's her second career Grand Slam. So great out, great effort by Coco. Men's side, wow. Semifinals, you had Sinner beat Djokovic in straight sets. It was 6-4, 7-5, 7-6. So it was a real competitive match. I mean, the fact that Djokovic is, you know, closing on 40, and he can still push his young kids all the way to the semifinals is incredible. Alcaraz took out the Italian Musetti. Musetti had to retire in the fourth set with an injury. And that set up the finals. You know, the top two players, these two have won now the last six Grand Slams. They've got some rivalry set up here. Sinner took the first two sets, 6-4, 7-6. Alcaraz came back and won the third set, 6-4. Alcaraz was down on his serve, 3-5, love 40 in the fourth set. Came back, staved off all three match points. Came back, won that fourth set, 7-6 in the tiebreak. And then won the fifth set also in the tiebreak, 7-6, to win in 5 hours and 29 minutes. Wow. It's the second longest ever Grand Slam final. Great job by Alcaraz. And like I said, these two have so far pulled away from everybody else in the field. You know, we had for 20 years, we had the big three. Well, now we've got big two.
It looks
two
like
now.
We got two more now, huh?
We've got
it'll be interesting right to now. See if anybody tries to join them, because right now these two look amazing. And listen, Alcaraz, you know, what, 22, 21? He's a kid. Sinner's not much older than him.
No.
Was he a year older, I think?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are.
These guys are two very young players.
No, it's listen. You know, the Americans actually had what four players in the round of 16.
Yep,
not bad. It's not bad. I mean, listen. You know, they're getting better. We're getting stronger. You need one of them to break through, and unfortunately, to break through against Sinner or Alcaraz right now looks like they need to have a bit of an off day, and you have to play really well. Yep. It's not impossible. It's just the way it is right now. Whether it be Paul or whether it be Tiafoe or whoever it may be. One of these guys can break through, and hopefully we can see that at the U.S. Open. It always makes it exciting when an American makes a run at the Open.
Yep.
Good stuff. And the women's side, Sabalenka being a bad loser. Stop it. Stop blaming the conditions. Shut up.
Yeah.
You lost. She beat you. You played on the same conditions. She won. I don't know what the crybaby stuff is. Stop. It's like nobody has grace anymore. What the hell? Drives me nuts.
All right. We'll move over to baseball. So the Yankees, Mets look like they're both going to win tonight. Yankees will be at 41-25. Mets at 44-24. Mets have a 5-game lead. Kev?
Yeah, about five.
Mets.
About 5 minutes ago. If you happen to watch our video feed on YouTube, I was laughing. I heard my daughter clapping in the background. I mean, talk about a Mets fan. She was clapping all excited because she actually saw a complete game by a starter. She was all pumped. Peterson threw the shutout tonight against Washington. Mets are playing real well. You know, you look at last week, you know, 7-game road trip, 4 against the Dodgers. They split that 2-2, which you would have signed up for. Had a chance to win all 4 games.
They should have swept that series, Kevin.
Yeah.
Should have swept it.
I'm not trying to be mean about the Mets. They're playing great, but they had every opportunity to sweep that series.
Yep. The good news is they did win the season series 4-3, so if there is a tiebreak, that gives them home field against the Dodgers in the playoffs. Then they go into Colorado, no letdown. You know, tough game Friday night. They pulled that one out and then just buried the Rockies Saturday and Sunday. And then come home last night, Tuesday night, they get the late rally, and then McNeil gets the RBI single, first pitch in the bottom of the 10th. And then tonight, 5-0. I mean, look, you know, Alonso's red hot, 20 RBIs in 10 games which is a tied the Mets record. He had a couple of home runs the other day in Colorado to move him past David Wright for second all time. He's 10 away from breaking Strawberry's record. Soto is really starting to get hot now. He's got, you know, 5 home runs in the last week. Nimmo and McNeil are both hitting well. Nimmo's played real well, or hit real well since moving up a lot in the 2-hole, hitting ahead of Soto. And Lindor, you know, the big question is going to be, is he going to make his first All-Star game since 2019? It's hard to believe. I mean, he gets off to the slow starts, but he's been top 10 MVP 3 times as a Met, and has not made the All-Star game since 2019.
Understand, though, that position, that position is against and Ellie De La Cruz is everybody's favorite guy and all this other crap that comes up, you know, but yeah, you're right. He should be an All-Star. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And then the pitching's still doing real well. And, you know, all is right now with Mets land.
Yeah, Manaea coming back soon, too, only should make them stronger.
And with the Phillies and the Braves both losing 8 out of 10, they've opened up a 5-game lead over the Phillies, pending what they do tonight.
And the Nats have passed the Braves.
Yeah.
The Nats seem like the team to me that's going to make this a little bit of a rivalry with the Mets over the next couple of years. The Phillies going to lose a couple guys. Their pitching is still really good. But Harper's getting older. Realmuto's taking steps back. Trey Turner hasn't really been that good since he signed the contract. Castellanos is gone. You know, there's a lot of – I mean, Bohm's just an average player. I'm sorry. I know that he gets RBIs. But you don't watch Bohm and say, wow, ever.
Schwarber.
Yeah, Schwarber probably gone at the end of the year too, they're saying. So it's like there's a lot of things going on with the Phillies. And, listen, when you have pitching and they have Wheeler – they're going to be okay. I mean, yeah. Not just Wheeler. I mean, but you know, Sanchez Suarez is good. Suarez is good, and freaking Luzardo's probably been the signing of the year in that respect. That he's been lights out.
If Nola ever gets his form back a little bit,
yeah.
And they have a couple of big time arms in the minors, but you never know how they're going to pitch at this level. But right now, the Mets look like they're primed to be the best team in the National League East for a while. Somebody feels pretty good about picking them to win the division. I don't know that one.
who did that?
That would be me. I didn't think like this easy, but I know it's a long way to go. But when Soto's starting to hit, his OPS is already in the mid-8s now. Yeah. You're starting to see him kind of climb up where he could finish where he usually does. His home runs are right on point where he normally is. It's just his average is still 250s, but he'll move that thing up.
And even that's up.
Yeah, he's coming.
All right, and over in the AL, Yankees look like they'll be 41-25 after today. They'll have a 4-game lead. They're playing really well. You know, they're
disappointing,
only
disappointing weekend against Boston.
Disappointing weekend.
Just because Rodon kind of got rocked in the game 3, just didn't expect that a little bit. But the Freed Rodon combo has been outstanding. Clark Schmidt's throwing a gem tonight. The pitching's been real, real good. Judge is still the best player on the planet. He just seems like he can do whatever he wants when he wants to. Wells is starting to really hit. The whole lineup's starting to hit, which is kind of cool. I mean, listen, you don't see a ton of great averages outside of Goldschmidt, but you're starting to see Wells do a lot. You're starting to see Bellinger do some. You're starting to see Volpe get hits, even though, you know, we discussed him a couple of weeks ago. The pen's been okay. We'll see how it goes. Going forward, obviously, they miss Weaver. And Cruz got rocked the other day. Williams has been okay. But, you know, you got to be somewhat excited as a Yankee fan of where this team is. I mean, they're going to be 16 over 500 if they hold on tonight, which is a good place to be.
Stanton on his way back.
Stanton on his way back, too. You're right. Ben Rice catching last night.
Yeah.
All you fantasy lovers. Ben Rice, they like him behind the plate because they have to get his bat in the lineup when Stanton comes back. They're not going to take Wells out either that often, but every now and then when Wells gets a rest, you're going to see Ben Rice back there. It's a little bit different. It's going to be a little interesting what the Yanks are doing.
It's going to be interesting. We're going to have the same discussion we had. I don't think it was last year's trade line deadline. It was 2 years ago, I think. Who's going to go out there and make the move for David Bednar? he's pitched real well since coming back after the early demotion.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. He's been lights out, kind of.
Red Sox had called up Roman Anthony this week, got his first hit. I got a quick note about Roman Anthony. Do you know his brother's name is Anthony?
Now I do.
And his father's name is Anthony Anthony. And his grandfather's name is Anthony Anthony.
Wow. Very, very very original with the names.
He also hit a 497-foot home run grand slam last week before he got called up. He looks like he's going to be a beast. One of the interesting things with the Red Sox, the fact that Duran is on the Doran is on the trade block kind of surprises me at 27. But I guess they just feel so good about the talent that they're bringing up that they want to see what they can do. But, wow, I mean, I know you're liking the way Nimmo's hitting, but I'm sure you'd love to see Duran.
Can Duran play center?
He can play center.
There you go. I think
you'd love to see him patrolling center field for you.
You know, like, you know, when you read online and you start hearing, you know, all the best teams upgrading center field, you know, Taylor's nice, you know, McNeil's been playing out there a little bit. And the name you keep hearing is Luis Robert.
Yep.
Or Luis Robert, as I prefer.
Yep.
Guy hasn't hit in 3 years.
I know.
He's hitting 170.
He hits for power and he can steal a base, but the fact is he doesn't hit 200. Well, I mean, this is an aberration. He's usually over 200, but he's not hitting over 240.
Not much over 200.
Yeah, he's not hitting over 240.
I mean, he's not the answer, I don't think.
I mean, there's a lot of rumor that the Mets will be in the Grom sweepstakes. Do you want him back?
Sure. You'd be fooled not to.
I'm just asking you. There's a lot of Met fans were a little down on him with not wanting to pitch in big spots and being injured too much. That's the only reason why I ask.
He's healthy. I mean, the only thing you've got to watch for this year is, you know, he's been out so much the last couple of years. He's already made 12 starts, which I think is probably more than he's made in the last 4 years. Maybe he's stretching numbers there. And you just worry about him wearing down in the second half because he doesn't have the innings over the last few years. But if he can, you know, if he bring in DeGrom, then you guarantee the 6-man rotation.
No, I agree. Benaiah coming back as well. You got a lot going on there.
Yep.
Go ahead, Kev. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say with Senga and Peterson, you know, that now you've got a nice deep rotation. And then you know, if you fill in and get the spot starts from your fifth and sixth guys, and really make sure, you know, these guys who don't have a lot of innings under their belts, you know, Senga threw what, 10 innings last year combined regular season playoffs. You know, that's why they're baiting these guys a little bit.
I get it.
And they have enough depth right now. I mean, they don't have an ace. You know, as good as Senga's looked so far, he's not an ace. But they have enough depth that they can go, you know, wheel out six guys who can give you 5 or 6 innings.
No doubt.
That's the way baseball is right now, unfortunately.
That's the sport.
Other notes around baseball. So Ohtani's throwing bullpen sessions already. I think the Dodgers may try to get him back at some point before the All-Star break, at least for an inning or two, to see what he's going to do. Should be interesting. I got a Judge thing. Any other points, baseball points?
I got a couple, but if you go first, I just want to throw in a couple quick things.
So if you look at the advanced metrics – called weighted runs created. Okay.
Yes. By the way, Judge just went yard. By the way,
oh god.
Just to put it in perspective, he just went yard against the Royals.
The
25.
The widely considered best offensive season ever was Bonds' 2002 season, when he had a 244 weighted runs created. At this moment, before tonight, Judge is over 251. Okay. Wow. And that was the year Bonds hit 370 with 46 home runs, 110 RBIs, 582 on base. So it was pretty crazy.
And then what, 200 walks?
And honestly, that's the only huge difference between him and Judge's season right now is Judge doesn't have all those walks. And you just
probably still lead the league in walks at the end of the year, but it won't be anywhere near Bonds.
Correct. And then that's really where it is. I mean, Judge right now is hitting 394, 25 home runs. I don't know. I don't even know how to put it into context anymore. Listen, if you told me he had 25 home runs at this point, I probably wouldn't bat an eye. But the fact that he's hitting 394 is just insane right now.
Well, if that home run, he's up to 395, according to the last stat I saw.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of crazy.
Darren, what else you got?
Well, I just want to touch on the Athletics for a second. I saw the greatest catch I've ever seen in my life by Denzel Clark. And listen, Edmonds' dead dive catch like 20-something years ago as a Diamondback was amazing. We all saw the visuals of Willie Mays' catch in the 54 World Series against Vic Wirtz. We've all seen Junior make plays, Torrey Hunter make plays, Andy Van Slyke make plays. We've seen so many amazing
Bo Jackson.
Bo
might be the closest to this one.
I mean, one of the ones Gordon I always remember, and it wasn't as exciting, but This Week in Baseball always showed the one with Fred Lynn and Brian Downing going across each other. Not nearly as good, but that was fun because of the music with it. But this was the greatest catch I think I ever saw.
This was unbelievable.
It was incredible. That's what I thought, too.
His timing was ridiculous. And Junior did so many amazing things. But Denzel Clark, who's hitting 200, has only played in like 20-something games. And the simple fact of the matter is he's made about three or four of these catches already, not to that level. But he's patrolling center field better than anyone I've seen in such a short amount of time. It's really fun to watch. I mean, the other thing – oh, I'm sorry, Jake. Go ahead.
Well, climb the wall – got the glove, I don't know, a foot over the fence and pulls it back in. It was unbelievable.
It was about as good a catch as the best catch I've ever seen. I don't even know what else to say. The other thing on that team, just to point out, Jacob Wilson, 366, 8 homers, 38 ribbies, 922 OPS. Who the hell is Jacob Wilson? He's second in the league in hitting. I mean, it's funny. This team offensively has talent. Brent Rooker's hitting. He had two homers again today. Lawrence Butler leads the league in doubles. Soderstrom's got 14 home runs. Kurt's sitting there. I mean, they've got a Langeliers, or a catcher is pretty solid. They have a lot of offensive talent. Now we're going to see if they can ever get pitching. But, wow. But I really want to talk about this team mostly about Denzel Clark because I just thought that was amazing. Anyway.
He's hitting 366 and yet 29 points behind Judge.
I know. It's ridiculous. It's freaking ridiculous.
All right. Any other baseball points?
So you mentioned Jacob Wilson. I mean, just to show you how long he's been around, the other day, Charlie Morton made a start. His teammate, you know, he's with Jackson. He's with Baltimore. You know, his teammate, of course, is Jackson Holliday. And he was going up against the A's with Jacob Wilson. Back in 2009, when he was a rookie, he was teammates with Matt Holliday and was facing off against Jack Wilson. to be teammate and opponent of fathers, and that was son 17 years later. Charlie Morton's been around for a long time.
How old is Charlie Morton anyway?
82.
And he's not pitching well right now either.
I know.
In Baltimore.
Now, we get into this again, but, you know, And the other one you mentioned was Shohei, you know, with him coming back pitching-wise. You know, the Dodgers are not playing all that great. And, you know, a lot of it is they're starting pitching injuries. But do you realize Shohei Ohtani's got 23 home runs and 39 RBIs?
Yeah.
17 solo shots. And I know advanced stats show that, you know, yeah, he's hitting leadoff. He's maximizing his at-bats. Wouldn't you be better having Betts and Freeman ahead of him, getting on base, and letting Ohtani hit 3-run home runs and solo shots?
Even if you put him second and put him behind Betts, even if you just did that, I think it would be enough. I agree with you on that.
That is the new preferred spot in the order, is the number two hole for your best hitter.
Yeah.
He's
being wasted as a leadoff guy.
I agree with you. I mean, I know 23 homers, 39 RBIs. Wow.
It's just not impressive in that respect. He's not getting the RBIs.
Yeah.
One last little congratulations in baseball. For the first time since 2014, the Cincinnati Reds take home the Ohio Cup. They beat the Guardians 5-1 in the season series. That's how long it's been that the Guardians have owned the Reds. 2014, by the way. So I just figured I'd share that little excitement there.
Wow. All right.
I got a little college baseball, too, if you don't mind. I'll jump into quick before we do it. College World Series starts up this weekend, okay? So we get Arizona versus Coastal Carolina, Big 12 versus the Sun Belt. We got Louisville versus Oregon State, the ACC versus the West Coast, Murray State versus UCLA, the OVC versus the Big Ten, and the LSU versus Arkansas. The two SEC teams will do battle in the first round. Now, the interesting thing about it is the SEC has the most teams. They got two. Everybody else has one. But if the Pac-12 was still around, they'd have three. Oregon State, Arizona, and UCLA would all be in this series. Couple of disappointing losses from teams like North Carolina, Duke. I actually had Murray State plus 2.5 runs. I was very proud of myself.
Go Racers.
Oh, absolutely. Rooting for the Racers hard in the sports book with nobody else caring about this game except me watching it, watching Duke Murray State. Come on, Murray State. Arkansas, Tennessee with their bad blood. A lot of interesting things. College players have been really good. Hopefully we get a really good World Series. Right now, the hottest team looks to me like Oregon State. They're just pummeling teams right now. Be interesting to see how that how the World Series shakes out.
Okay. I have an NFL point, and it deals with Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, signed
a one-year, $13.5 million contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's also got another bonus in there, which would allow him to earn up to $19 million for the season. But, Kev, how does it feel to have traded quarterbacks with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Aaron Rodgers for Justin Field. Let's do it.
Whatever. You know, I'd rather – maybe this is looking through the Jets' green-colored glasses instead of rose-tinted, but, you know, I'd rather have Fields this year. He's 26. Let's see, you know, with Aaron Glenn, with the new offensive coordinator, maybe they can design something. Maybe they can design an offense that Justin Fields is comfortable in. Maybe he can do something. He's 26. You know what Rodgers is. He's 41. Yep. He's got 1 year left in the league. You know, if Fields bombs out anyway, it's fine because then you know you're going to be in contention for one of those high draft picks and one of the quarterbacks next year.
Obviously not a trade. I jest, of course.
But I know you're joking. The NFL loved it because they already had Pittsburgh and the Jets for week one.
Yeah.
And they would have made a prime time if they knew Rodgers was definite.
Yep.
Thank God. Put me back to 1 o'clock where I know where my team is. Nobody cares about us. I'm much happier.
But Sunday at 1,
Jets. 4:15, I'm miserable, but then I can watch the 8 o'clock game with a clean head, and I'm fine.
Yep. Dan, what do you think? I mean, any difference of opinion? Or
listen, the only thing was I did want to keep Rodgers when the season was over. I thought he gave us the best chance to win. I thought that everybody expected a little too much right off an Achilles, so he had a rough first few games. But he played better down the stretch. Fact of the matter is I'm all in on this Aaron Glenn, Moogie kind of thing. We'll see if Aaron Glenn's got the chops to be a head coach. We'll find out. But right now this team's going to be running the ball, and we'll see what we can do. More interestingly enough, Aaron Rodgers also got married apparently during the couple of months, or whatever that means. But I'm fine with where we are is the final point though I'll make.
All right.
Did he get married on his one of his ayahuasca highs?
Whatever works for him.
All right. Anything else before we move on to golf?
One last thing. So Judge okayed a $2.8 billion settlement, paving the way for colleges to pay their athletes. Okay, so now they think it's going to clean this up. I think it's just going to be more red tape and more confusion. I don't quite understand exactly. I mean, I understand what they're doing now that the NCAA is no longer involved in the whole process of the payment. But this the college sports as we know it is over, guys. It's been over for a couple of years, and it's only going to get worse and harder. This is professional sports at a college level. And that's where we are right now. And it's going to be – I mean, Alabama doesn't have the boosters. They're begging people to give them money. Alabama, because they can't compete with other SEC squads right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy right now. I don't love it, but this is where we are. So as we learn more about the settlement and what's going to happen and how things are going to break out, we'll try to explain them the best we can. But just know it's July 1st, I believe, the colleges have to start paying the players. So – we'll see how it all shakes out.
Okay. And then we move to golf. It's U.S. Open week. It's the 125th U.S. Open. First time in 9 years, they are back at Oakmont Country Club in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. It's the course that puts everybody at their knees, apparently. Scottie Scheffler going in with overwhelming odds.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Why don't you give me a rundown?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, Oakmont has always been a bear to play. 9 previous U.S. Opens, 23 players have broken par in 9 U.S. Opens.
I love it.
The best winning score is 5 under.
Love it.
This is not the Greater Hartford Open at 30 under par. And this week, you know, when you read about it, long rough. I mean, we've had so much.
5 inches plus, Kev. 5 inches plus.
I mean, anybody who lives up here in the Northeast knows that we've had so much rain this spring. The rough is just growing like weeds. And yet the greens you've seen on practice, 14, 15 on the tip meter.
Yeah, I mean, it's like putting on glass, guys. Trying to get that put the stop on glass.
The U.S. Open, the USGA has to be extremely careful not to make this a mockery. There's a line that they can't cross. They can't have players go out there and have a winning score at 10 over par. You want it to be around even par. You want to make sure that if a guy hits a wedge or an 8-iron into the green and hits a beautiful shot, that it stays on the green. That's the big key. You can't be making it so unfair that it rolls off. And that's a fine line that the USGA is going to have to be extremely careful of this week, I think.
Well, we're going to find out Thursday, Kev, if they're going to have to fix pin placements. If Thursday becomes a really bad day all around, you'll see pin placements that are going to be in easier spots Friday and Saturday. They may not make it easy on Sunday, but they will see what happens on Thursday and adjust pin placements. Not that that always helps, but it'll help some.
Yeah. I mean, you know, remember Pinehurst a couple of years ago with the turtle shell
it's brutal.
Greens, and you know, he hit a chip shot barely on the green and it's rolling all the way across and off the other side. I mean, you can't get unfair like that.
I agree with you.
You know, you want to make it a test, and you know, with the five inches plus of rough, you're not going to be able to bomb drives and hack it out and get anywhere near the green.
These professionals are struggling like crazy just moving the ball out of the rough. It's like watching us play. I'm not trying to be funny with that. It's brutal.
I mean, supposedly, you know, they asked Rory. He played a practice round Monday, and they were asking him, what'd you shoot? Yeah, probably an 81. And you think he played all that badly. I mean, you know, like you said, you've got to be you want to see par, 1 over, 2 over, win this tournament. You don't want 10 over.
Yeah, they've always made Oakmont brutal.
Yep. That being said, you know, it's Scheffler's to lose. If he's driving like he is the last couple of weeks, fairways and greens are going to be so important. And, you know, he's won 3 of the last 4. Last couple of wins, the Memorial, he was driving the ball beautifully, keeping it in the fairway so well. You know, there's no reason for him not to win this tournament except it's a U.S. Open. You look at the other guys you normally would think of, Rory. You know, he struggled big time since the Masters. You know, the PGA, his driver that he used to win the Masters was found non-conforming, and ever since he's been searching for a driver that works. Last week at the Canadian Open, it didn't work. You know, he was the plus 8 over par, 78 in the second round, missed the cut. He's all sorts of, you know, questionable right now with the driver. And if he's not driving the ball straight, he's not going to be able to get out. DeChambeau is a defending champion. You know, he's known bomb it and then gouge it out. Last year in winning the U.S. Open, he hit 57% of the fairways. If he's at 57% this week, he's not going to win.
He won't even make the cut.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got to hit it long and straight. And right now, the guy you got to pick to do it is going to be Scheffler.
Quick quote for you from Jack Nicklaus, okay? And it's a famous quote about the U.S. Open. A difficult golf course eliminates a lot of players. The U.S. Open flag eliminates a lot of players. Some players just weren't meant to win a U.S. Open, and quite often, a lot of them know it. I mean, it just talks about what the U.S. Open does to you. And that was Jack back in the – listen, like you said, Kev, this is a bear of a course. Guy like Morikawa, who gets the ball into the fairways a lot. A guy like Sepp Straka, who hits the ball in the fairway a lot.
Yeah.
A guy like Corey Connors, hits the ball in the fairway a lot. sleeper, a guy like a Russell Henley, who hits the ball in the fairway a lot. You know, Fleetwood, Sung Jae Im, Sam Burns. These are the kind of guys that you have to look for to compete with, or at least make it a battle for Scheffler. You know, because Scheffler has that one day every round where he is all over the place and saving himself. Will he be able to do that? He usually finds his way to save himself from everything. If he does that on Thursday or Friday, he could put himself in real danger. Yep. Because this is a kind of course where you can't save yourself. And you look at like a Justin Thomas, a guy that putts really well, leads the tour in putting this year. You know, if he can get on there, it averages less than two putts at 1.66. You know, so you need guys like that to compete. Again, the guys I look for that have a shot at being close, Morikawa would be the biggest name that I would put out there. Well, I think Morikawa. Russell Henley's the guy. Yeah, more. I have Russell Henley and Corey Connors as guys that I'm going to put a little bit of money on for top 10. So.
Yeah, I like Straka. I like your Straka pick.
And I like Straka. Yeah, I think
so he is very accurate off the tee.
That's all you need is a guy that you got to be accurate. But Straka's not long. But if he can be accurate, that'll be the key. And this whole course is length and accuracy. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, 290-yard par three. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're going to be pulling out driver on a par three.
Listen, I mean, you and I, three of us are playing that. We're trying to get on in two. I mean, we have no shot. Not even shot with a miracle with our freaking driver to get there. And these guys are going out there, you know, having to play a 290-yard par three. I know they want to make it challenging, but like you said, I want to see this. I want to see this Pebble Beach challenging. I want to see minus three, minus four, you know, five or six guys in red numbers. A lot of people hovering around par. That's what I want to see. I hope we don't see. I want it to be hard like Gino does, but I don't want to see plus the winner with a plus six.
Yeah.
All right. So I got some bets. You know how I like to do this. I like to pick guys to finish in the top 10.
Yep.
I like to throw them together, do a little parlay with two guys. So DeChambeau and Fleetwood would pay plus 512. So I'm kind of on that one.
That's my guy, Fleetwood.
Top 10, Sepp Straka and Koepka, plus 2560. Okay, that's one of the long ones. Wow. I got a top 10 with three golfers, DeChambeau, Fleetwood, and Scottie Scheffler. Threw him in there at plus 686. So I'm kind of liking that.
You go from plus 520 to plus 680?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's all it is.
I mean, that's amazing. That's how favored Scotty is. Wow.
It's nuts.
And then I figured the only way I can get – the only way I can really bet on Scheffler is something like that. But you can bet them to be in the top five. So now we're getting a little bit more we're getting very hard now. So – I figured let's take the two favorites off the board and put them in a top five bet. So Scheffler and DeChambeau to both finish in the top five plus 308. So I'm kind of liking that right now. I figure I can get positive odds. I'm figuring Scheffler will be in the top five. So if I can get DeChambeau in there, it's plus 308. So those are the four bets that I actually like. Long shots. Finished in the top 10, Keegan Bradley at plus 475. I'm kind of liking that. And Cameron Young at plus 800 if you're going long shots. You guys like anybody else to long shot to finish in the top 10?
Well, I gave you my guy. I like Russell Henley. He's plus 360, I think, last I saw.
Yep.
He's kind of a shot, I guess. Sam Burns plus 400. You know, Aaron Rye from the Great Britain plus 550 is a guy I look at a little bit too. And Sung Jae Im at plus 600 would be the other guy I throw in there.
Okay. Kev, anybody?
I think we've hit them all.
Okay.
You know, Olberg. You know, we're waiting for him to make a run here and win one of these.
He's 22-1 to win the whole thing, by the way.
Wow.
I mean, that's how dominant Scheffler is, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only four golfers that are under 20-1 to win. Scheffler, DeChambeau, John Rahm, and Rory. Those are the only four that are under 20-1.
Yeah, Olberg's fifth. I think he's 22-1.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, him and Xander Schauffele are both 22-1 at this point. So,
okay, if Scheffler doesn't win it, Kev, who wins it?
Shane Lowry.
Okay, Gino, Scheffler doesn't win it. Who wins it?
John Rahm.
Okay, I'm going with Morikawa. So let's see who finishes higher out of Rahm, Morikawa, and Shane Lowry. You sure you want that to be your pick, Kev?
Yeah.
All right.
Are we getting to the point with Scheffler that we're going to see bets the way we used to see with Tiger, which was odds to win, Tiger or the field?
I think we could. I mean, listen, he's got to do a little bit longer and prove it a little bit longer. I mean, but
we're getting there, though.
He's the best player in the world, guys.
We're really getting close to that, I think.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
All right. That's all I got with golf.
Anything else, Kev?
Nope.
No women's sport that we miss, Kev? You sure?
You want to talk Angel Reese? No.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, the wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the NBA Finals will probably finish sometime in late June, early July. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be Apple products, Spotify, whatever you like. Please like our stuff. If you don't like it anyway. And please share it, for crying out loud. Damn it, we want more followers. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.